I'm Peggy Pirro, and this is Food From Here. Baker Jenny Scheller grew up in Posey County in a home full of cookie baking, which included all the traditional holiday cookies, plus a few treats I'd never heard of, like potato candy. She launched her home-based business, The Dainty Flower, in 2024, and her focus is on the macaron. We talked about the lineage of that cookie and its relatively recent arrival in our area, the precision required to make a good macaron, and the inordinate number of eggs needed to produce so many dozens of meringue-based cookies. Jenny sells her macarons at local pop-ups and street markets like the downtown Evansville Night Market. We talk about how she got her start and what she likes best about being a home-based baker. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Jenny Scheller of The Dainty Flower. Jenny Scheller, welcome to Food From Here.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you were able to come in today.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to get started by you telling me a little bit about where you grew up and what kind of food you grew up on.
Yeah, so I grew up in Posey County, so small town called Cynthiana. I come from a family of bakers and really good cooks. So every, you know, holiday or family get together, it was guaranteed that there was really good food there. So yeah, I've got to give credit to my village. You know, that they set me up.
So tell me about some of that food that would show up at your gatherings.
I would say we would have some of, you know, some staples like the Scheller side German potato salad.
Okay.
Oh, man, it is killer.
Yeah, and is that served hot?
No.
Okay.
You can eat it hot,
okay.
But we don't. Usually cold. Uh-huh. But, yeah, that's one recipe that, whew, it is delicious.
Do you make it yourself now?
I haven't tried
okay.
it. Okay. I haven't tried it. I know it's quite a process, and it can be a little finicky. But, yeah, I think my mom's definitely got it down, and she got the recipe from my grandma. So it's been in the family.
Nice.
But, yeah, they do a good job.
Okay.
But, yes, besides, you know, the staples, we would always have, like, really good baked goods.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say mainly, like, cookies mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
What kind of cookies?
Okay, so... My mom, she makes really good sugar cookies.
Oh, okay.
I would say she's known for her sugar cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So every Christmas, and I always remember, and she still does this, but she does like a big cookie platter for Christmas.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and she'll give them out to friends and family, but she goes crazy. So she'll have a list, and on these cookie platters, you'll have like chocolate chip cookies, peanut butter Buckeyes, snickerdoodles, spritz cookies, sugar cookies.
She's like an entire bakery on one platter.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. Divinity, M&M, creamsicle fudge, potato candy. She makes her own turtles.
Wait a minute. Potato candy?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what that is.
Okay. I'm not quite sure. I've never made it.
Okay.
But It's like a sugary log, if
okay.
you will, and
uh-huh.
then you slice it.
Okay.
So it's like a little spiral disc.
Okay.
And it's peanut butter and just sweet.
Okay.
Sweet.
No actual potatoes are used in the making of this
yes.
cookie? Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
I think potato, I do believe potato is like the base of it.
Instead of flour, maybe,
I
or in addition
so, yeah.
to a little flour.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah.
I need to look that up.
Okay. It's very tasty.
Is it known by any other name, or is it just like its familiar name is potato cookie?
I think it's potato cookie. I don't know.
Potato candy.
It might right. have a formal mm-hmm. name, but
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, she must get started fairly early in the season to get all this baking done.
Not really. She she'll have a day pretty close to Christmas, maybe a week before, so it's all pretty fresh.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
She's busy.
So you come by this baking thing honestly.
Pretty honest, yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Deidre. She's a good role model and a really good baker to, you know, aspire to be. So
did you have a favorite
a cookie when you were growing up?
Hmm.
I mean, a kid. A kid likes all the cookies, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't too big on, like, the Fig Newtons when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You kind of, that's an acquired taste, I
mm-hmm.
guess. Some of us never acquire it. But most cookies are just A-OK. But
yeah.
My mother used to make some wonderful butter spritz cookies at the holiday time, they're very simple cookies, but they're sometimes the simple things are the, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, then that's one that she would make on her cookie platter is the
mm-hmm.
spritz cookies.
Mm-hmm.
They are simple but delicious. But I would say my favorite would probably be sugar cookie with either plain or with, you know, icing or
mm-hmm.
something. But yeah, Mom always made really good sugar cookies. And then I don't know if you remember that place in the Washington Square Mall.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called? Like Just Cookies?
Yeah, I think so. Like I want to say, yeah.
They're frosted sugar cookies.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I miss those.
Yes. Yes.
But I always remember like going there as a kid and we would get a sugar cookie and...
Big treat.
Oh, yeah.
And they were big
yes.
cookies,
yes.
especially, you know, if you were used to your mom's, maybe not your mom's, but my mom made like what we would call normal size cookies, you know, little 2-inch cookies.
Yeah,
and you'd
yeah.
get these 4.5-inch cookies. At
so
the
good.
Was,
and the
yes.
icing was so soft.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Delicious.
I'm going to ask you about the macaron because that is your specialty,
yes.
of course. I wonder, when did you first, and where were you when you first tried a macaron? Do you remember?
I don't think I remember the first time. I was trying to go back in my vault, in my memory vault, and try to remember, but I don't think I could remember the first time. But I will say, I think basically the first time that I truly remember is being at Pangea in Evansville.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
And they would always have such a pretty and awesome selection. And every time I would go in there, I would get one of each, basically.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So I think that was a big motivator. Is they were just so pretty and so good. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to learn to make these one day.
Yeah. Well, they've only made their way into our part of the country and I don't know, I'm going to say the last 10 years or so because I don't remember seeing or tasting one locally
mm-hmm.
before about 2016 or so. I mean, I remember the place where I was working where we were selling them and it was kind of a miraculous little thing. I'd seen them in pictures.
Yeah.
I'd seen them on
yeah.
Instagram.
In like big cities.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I had not had a locally made one, and it was a revelation. So for people listening who might not be familiar with the macaron, can you describe the cookie to us?
Yes. So it's basically, no pun intended, dainty little sandwich cookie with the outer shells being like a crunchy top with a chewy and kind of softer middle, and then sandwiched between, you usually have a buttercream ganache or just like a fruit jam
mm-hmm.
in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And they tend to be small,
mm-hmm.
probably
yes,
2-inch
small.
Cookies.
Yes.
Or
yeah, I would say about 2-inch.
Yeah.
And I have seen people, and this is something I have wanted to try it, they make mini Macs.
They're so cute.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes.
They're adorable.
I know. I wonder what a maxi Mac would be like, right?
I have seen macaron cakes.
Yes.
Yes. I haven't tried those yet. Because I think it would be a little more finicky than
oh yes
typical shell.
It would the baking challenge would
yes.
be getting the temperature right and
mm-hmm.
so the center is still soft, but
yeah,
it just doesn't
collapse.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, well, you know, in my research for our conversation, I was kind of surprised to learn that macarons and macaroons share a common heritage, I guess you could say. Now, when macarons first emerged in this market, they were easily confused for the macaroon. I remember asking me if I would make macaroons, thinking they were going to get macarons.
Yes.
And they were disappointed.
Yeah.
I mean, the macaroons were still good, but it wasn't what they expected. So They do share a common heritage, though, these two cookies. They both, and I learned they both come from Italy rather than France, which was also a surprise to me.
Yes.
But I'd like to talk a little bit about what makes the two cookies similar and what makes them different, just to get that persistent confusion out of the way. So do you want to take that on?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. Yeah, so I will say I was guilty of calling it a macaroon, especially at Pangea when I first kind of discovered them. And then once I actually found that it was macaron, kind of sounded silly saying, you know, the correct way. But yeah, so they do share a common base. So they're both meringue-based, which basically is egg whites whipped. So they do share that, egg whites and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the differentiator being macaron, they are made up of typically almond flour and powdered sugar. And then macaroon is made up of shredded coconut. And mm-hmm. then typically it could be dipped or...
Yeah, they're good dipped, aren't they?
Yes. So I can see where one would be disappointed, you know, asking for one and getting the other.
Yeah. Well, they were very kind about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The Dainty Flower. Where did that name come from? I mean, it's a lovely name, and it's very descriptive of your product, but I'm wondering about its origins.
It's kind of a silly story. When we had decided to, you know, move forward and start selling them, coming up with a name, I didn't feel like I was very creative in that sense, and I was really stressing about it because I would, you know, do AI-generated, you know, give them a description, come up with a name, and I just didn't like any of them. So I just told myself, I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to stress about it. It's going to come to me when it comes to me. It's fine. So one night I was laying in bed, and you know how you have those just random thoughts you're trying to fall asleep. And well, one of my thoughts was, if I was a flower, what kind of flower would Jenny be? What would I be? So I was just picturing, I was like, yeah, it's probably like a dainty flower, because, you know, I'm a sensitive person.
Uh-huh.
And a gust of wind, it's probably going to blow away or something. And then I was like, wait, dainty flower. I can spell flower, F-L-O-U-R. Oh my gosh, it's the main ingredient. The dainty flower, I love it. So I was like, I cannot forget this, because I was laying in bed, I was about to fall asleep. So the next day, I wrote it on a Post-it note.
You remember.
Yeah, just God. So I didn't forget it.
So this was just a year ago, a little over a year ago, when you had your epiphany dream.
Yeah.
And actually, you started before you had the dream, obviously, because you were in the process of getting your business started. So can you share that story, that startup story with us?
Yeah. So I think the big motivator, in a weird way, was my cousin getting married. And we both have we share that common enjoyment of macarons. So when we were planning her shower, which was in late December of 2023. Oh, my gosh. Wow. We're already in.
Yep. I know.
Yep. That was a long time ago.
Time has a way of doing that, yes.
So when we were trying to decide, you know, the details and logistics of everything, we knew we wanted to have a really good dessert table with a lot of good, yummy treats. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to make macarons. That would be super cool to have at her shower. We don't have to buy them. I can just make them. So it was probably early November when my mom, she was like, all right, come over. We're doing it. We're gonna try it out. So I went over, and I wasn't really super motivated to do it, because I knew just from research and, you know, watching baking competitions that it's a pretty tricky confection to perfect. So I get over there, and she's got all the ingredients. She's got the mats and everything. She's like, all right, do it. I'm like, okay. So I was like, do you think this is okay? And she kind of just, like, you know, supervised. And I was shocked when they didn't really turn out that half bad. I was like,
that's high praise there.
What? Yeah, you could tell it was a macaron. And that's huge on your first try. So then, and they weren't perfect by any means, you know. So after that, that's when the motivation kicked in, because I'm like, oh, I'm going to get this. I'm going to perfect this. And we're going to have them for the shower. So, yeah, between November and into December that year, that's what I did, was just practice.
So maybe
practice,
6 weeks of cookie baking?
Yep.
And that was the first time that you had tried it, when you went to your mother's that day?
Yes.
And you say she had the mats. Now, these are mats that have the circles mm-hmm. described on them, so
yes.
that you can get the size of the wafer
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
Is that extruded, or do you just put it on with a spoon? How do you place the cookie dough?
Yeah, so you put your batter into a piping bag with just a normal
okay.
round tip, and then you just go and
squirt it out
one by one. Yep.
Yeah, pipe
yep.
it onto the
yes
into a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? And was that a tricky skill to learn?
You know, it was all pretty tricky
yeah.
to learn, and I'm still learning. But it was a concept to learn, to have all of them a uniform size. That was one thing I was not necessarily great at when I first started, was getting everything the same size.
Right.
So everything could match up correctly, and you didn't have one that's bigger than the other. So,
yeah, because you have to put them together in pairs, so they really do need to be mm-hmm. identical
yeah.
wafers.
Yeah. So if I have a batch where everything matches up perfectly, that's a win.
Yeah.
Yeah. That almost never happens.
How much did you help your mother during when you were growing up, during her baking sessions?
Yeah, I think I helped her. I mean, not like all the time, but it was fun to help her. And I think at one point in my age, when she realized I could do stuff on my own, that's when she was like, okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll get it started. You run with it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You do have to, as the mom, you have to pay attention and supervise, but then know when to step back
yeah.
and just let your kids go for it a little bit.
And that was one thing that I got onto her, I remember, is every time I would stir something and it was ready, I'm like, okay, mom, it's ready. And she would take it and she'd stir a little bit more. I'm like, why do you do that?
Mm-hmm. It
so
was ready. Yeah.
Like,
right?
I told you it was ready.
Yeah. You're a home-based baker. Your business is a home-based business.
Yeah.
So you are following the Indiana Cottage Business, home-based business regulations.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what a home-based baker can offer and can't, and where you are legally allowed to sell your products?
Yeah, yeah. So in the research I've done, I've found that Indiana isn't super strict on their cottage laws. Basically, what we need is our food handler certification, which I got that, I think, sometime last year. And then just proper labeling and, you know, ingredients and, you know, allergies and stuff like that. And then we would have to get some type of license mm-hmm. to sell at a business, because that's considered like wholesale.
Yeah, you actually have to produce out of a commercial kitchen in order to sell to a retail outlet.
Yes.
So you are limited in selling online.
Yes.
And at farmers markets. And I guess you can sell directly to customers from your home if you're comfortable
yes.
doing that.
Yes.
So when you first started selling them, where did you go?
So our first event was the downtown sidewalk sale.
Okay.
Yeah. And honestly, yeah, starting this business really opened my eyes to how many events downtown put on for the community. Like all the night markets, we did all of those, the NoCo Makers Market.
Sure.
They were all so fun and just a great way to start, you know, kind of start our business really with those events.
Yeah. In fact, I think it was at the NoCo Market that I first met you. And Tom Leggett, who was the market manager of the Franklin Street Bazaar, was saying of his market that it's a great incubator for starting a small business to see if you like it. Because a lot of times there are elements of it that we find we like, but there are other aspects of actually running it as a business that we find we either don't care for or are not particularly good at, and maybe we don't want to get good at that part of it kind of thing. So yeah, these little markets are really good for people who can do the home-based products. Now, of course, you can't sell burritos that you make out of your home or things that need to be held at temperature or anything like that. But for baked goods, it's a great way to start. So how did those go for you?
They went very well.
Can you share what very well means?
Yeah. Okay. So I was honestly surprised with our first event at the sidewalk sale. We sold out, and that kind of solidified, okay, there's a market for this and just this. So I think we're okay with just selling the macarons right now. And it was a gorgeous day, and yeah, we sold out, and I believe I had brought 12 flavors. So it was, I did a lot of preparation, and it was just a really, really great day.
You sell them in half dozens and dozens. Mm-hmm. So when you brought, what did you bring? Like how many?
So I believe that one was on Mother's Day weekend. So we had pre-made some like Mother's Day boxes.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think I think it was around 600 or 600 or 700, something like
cookies.
That.
Cookies?
Yeah.
And then did you fill the boxes as people, did you let people select their own boxes?
Yes.
Okay, I
get
it.
Yeah, I did. I had some pre-made boxes, but I didn't feel like those sold as well as people picking out their own.
Sort of like at the donut shop, right? Yeah. You go and you pick your own dozen.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, I remember doing that with you, Jenny, and looking at the colors in the boxes and saying, okay, I'm not sure I like that dark pink one. Let's go with a paler pink, right?
Yeah.
Because I wanted a color palette, right? Yeah.
Some of the boxes that people put together, I'll package it, and I'm like, this is so cute. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's part of the joy, I think, of them is all the... Mm-hmm. We'll get into talking a little bit about the color palettes of those, too. But I think it's interesting that you learned quite quickly that you didn't have to have a wide assortment of items, that you could just do the macarons and that would be enough.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you?
Yes. Yeah. I didn't realize there were other people like me that really loved macarons and were pretty passionate about them.
Yeah.
Because I, like, through all the events we've had, we have people that are coming just for our booth. And that is, it's just so humbling and so
gratifying.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's a confidence booster as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's this one little girl that she'll come to every event, and it's so sweet.
Yeah. Do you sell them individually at events?
Yeah. If you just want one for a little.
Yeah, but nobody just wants one.
No.
I mean,
no, I don't recommend. You can't.
Jenny, I was wondering how you've been affected by the price of eggs.
Yes. So they have gotten quite expensive. So in our case, we get our eggs from Sam's because they sell a box of 90. So last year, I believe it was in October, I got that box of 90 eggs for $15. And yesterday I just bought the same box of 90 eggs and they were $40.
Mm.
So,
ouch.
Yeah. Yeah, not ideal, but I don't think it's gonna hinder me, at least, from making them. It's just, it is what it is.
Have you had to adjust your prices?
We did this year. Mm-hmm. So we kind of analyzed last year's numbers and kind of did a new analysis on our ingredients. And based on that, we're like, okay, we probably should raise it just a little bit. So yeah, they did raise just a little bit, but nothing crazy.
When we were off mic, you were talking about, because the recipe for macarons uses just egg whites, there's a lot of separation of the white from the yolk that has to go on when you're making a batch of cookies. And you described a contraption I wonder if you can describe it again for our listeners.
Yeah. So it's basically, think of like a slide or a multi, like two slides on this contraption. So you crack your eggs into a big bowl, and then there is a spot on top where you would pour the eggs in, and then it would go down this slide that kind of turns into two, and then you have two bowls at the very end where it basically separates the egg from the yolk for you and kind of does it one by one. So you have a bowl of eggs or egg whites and a bowl of yolks at the end.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I would think, you know, when eggs are just a couple dollars a dozen, if you ruin a batch of egg whites by getting a little bit of yolk into them, it's like, but it doesn't stab you through the heart as it would when they're as expensive as they are now.
Yeah.
So it's very important when you're trying to whip egg whites to make sure that no egg yolks get in. What do you do with all those egg yolks?
Well, I can make custard with it, but I usually don't use all of them because there's just so many. But I have made creme brulee with it, which is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you have a dog?
No, we have two kitties.
I had some egg yolks sitting on my counter once after I separated some eggs, and my notorious little tabby cat jumped on my counter and ate every egg yolk out of the bowl. So cats like them too.
Okay. That is so funny. But yeah, if there's like anybody that needs egg yolks, reach out.
They do freeze.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I need
I'm not sure what you can use them in after. You certainly don't want to, you know, scramble them.
Yeah.
They're probably not as good for brulee or anything like that. But for other baking, I would think cakes especially.
Yeah.
But it'd be something to look into. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you aspire to a brick and mortar?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Uh-huh. It's early.
Yeah.
It's early.
It's early. And I've seen, you know, the ins and outs of owning a brick and mortar. And I know and I've seen how taxing that can be on the owners. So it's not something I'm opposed to, mm-hmm. but it's just maybe we'll see where it takes us.
And mm-hmm.
I would love to. That would be cool, but I'm going to keep my full-time job for now and do this on the side.
Yeah. Grow slow. You know, I don't care what anybody says. Grow slow is, I think, a good principle for small business people.
Yeah, there's no rush.
Follow. I want to ask you a little bit about the cookies themselves. Macarons are one of the few commercially available baked goods that are traditionally gluten-free because they're traditionally made with almond flour, as you were mentioning earlier. I was surprised to learn, though, that you can make them with all-purpose flour.
Yes.
Have you tried doing that?
Not something I've tried yet. It is on my list, though, because I would like to have a product for everybody, whether you're nut-free or gluten-free or vegan. So, yeah, it's not something that I have tried yet, because I think it's a little more finicky than the regular macaron.
That's what I was reading, and that surprised me. A lot about macarons surprised me.
Right.
The more I learned about them, that there would be a little more difficulty if you were making it with standard.
Yeah. So the science behind it, which I don't know exactly, but almond flour has like the nut particles that can break down the air in the batter better than all-purpose flour, which is a little less dense and thinner. So it just can't break down the airiness of the batter as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you pipe them out, there's probably more bubbles you have to pop.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it obviously would affect the texture of the cookie as well, because almond flour is a higher fat.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, it's a little granular. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gritty.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that gives you an entirely different texture.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be exactly the same cookie, even if you could perfect the wheat flour.
Right. I've heard they're just a little more crunchy.
Yeah. So, well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
I love the color palettes that you work with. They're just a cohesiveness to them. The hues, you know, the intensities of the color. I like macarons of all hue and color saturation, don't get me wrong.
Don't discriminate.
But that, yeah, but there is something about the more, oh, I don't know, I want to call it an organic palette. It's a little softer. There are, the colors are a little less saturated. I've seen some, like, very hot pink macarons.
Bold, yeah.
Yeah, bold colors.
Yeah.
And they're fun and so forth, but I like the color palette that you use. Pastel, yeah. But there's also some more earthy tones in them. How did you develop that color palette?
Well, that was the one thing that really attracted to me to the macarons was just the variety of colors. Because you can do any color you want to. And, you know, I'm not a decisive person. Like, my favorite color is white because it's the presence of all color. I can't choose. They're all pretty, you know? So that was one thing I was really excited to dive into, was all the colors. And I think now I have a really good inventory of color bases to where I can mix a few to get the desired color I want. But yeah, that's one thing I really try to do, is have, like, people can guess the macaron without seeing a label or something. So
guess the flavor.
Yeah.
You also do a nice job decorating the top of them with just a little bit of, I don't know, a little bit of chocolate liner, or, you know, color line across the top of it. It's just, they're just lovely. And they make such a wonderful palette because they're small, and you can get a lot out of just a few little strokes of icing or...
Yeah. It does make the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get some requests for, like, characters or more decorated, to where I'm using like royal icing. So I've made Pooh Bear ones.
Oh dear.
Before.
Oh, I bet they were cute.
They were so cute. And once you put it together, you know, because it's a simple cookie with a few added shapes and a little bit of black dots.
Yes.
And it's just so cute. And the way it comes together is, it's awesome.
So you do take custom orders?
Yes.
Okay. Good
yes.
to know.
Yeah. I've had orders for, you know, the Pooh Bears. That was a first. And I always tell the customer, like, I haven't tried this before. I'm not going to guarantee, but I'm going to try my very best. So.
And I'm sure your customers have been happy.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I always
good.
Get so nervous when sending out an order, let alone a custom order. But hearing the feedback later, it's very assuring, reassuring.
Yeah. A couple more color questions. I know that it's hard to get some colors right.
Yes.
Purple, in fact, has always been my, I don't know, what do you get? It's the hard one.
Yeah.
Half the time, purple comes out gray. It looks like concrete. And I noticed that you have managed to achieve a pretty respectable kind of a lilac-colored macaron. I'm going to assume that you started with commercial colors and went from there. I can't imagine trying to create your own colors from scratch with, you know, beet juice or something.
Yeah.
Or saffron or something. It would just it's too much chemistry, I would think. And then you don't know how they're going to react once they're baked, how they're going to react to the heat or and so on. So can you talk a little bit about how you acquired your colors? And you mentioned that you're mixing some of your own now just a little bit. So talk about that color process just a little bit.
Yeah, so I started out with, you know, your basic Wilton food colorings, the gel. And It was also a learning process. Your recipe you use really will make a difference on how they turn out and how they kind of mature. So before baking, you can have a really pretty color, and then after, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So a few months ago, I did get a new recipe for my shells, where before, purple and blue, and of course white, were the tricky colors I did not like to do. So when testing out this new recipe, I was like, I'm doing purple, because purple never turns out for me. Because it would turn out like you said, a little more gray, or blues would have just a little bit of browning around mm-hmm. the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And it still tastes good. It's just not as pretty and not perfect, so I don't want to sell it. So with this new recipe, I tried purple, and they turned out true to color. It was a lilac, like a light purple. So it was tricky. But yeah, I gradually kind of researched more of the preferred ingredients among the, you know, macaron community.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a website that I think they're made in the USA, so that's nice. And mm-hmm. they have such a wide variety of gel food colorings, and then also powdered food colorings, mm-hmm. which are typically used if you want a really vibrant, deep color.
Yeah, like that fuchsia that we see sometimes.
Yep.
Right, yeah. What would make the difference in the recipe that you found? So, or were you talking about the recipe of the food coloring gel itself?
Oh, no, of the shells.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And that was one thing when I started this journey and doing a lot of research. The macaron communities, they advise that you stick to a recipe. Don't recipe hop. You stick to one, and then you kind of modify it as you need. Because macarons, everything can affect them, whether it be the humidity in your house, or how long you set them out, the temperature of your oven. You need to get a oven thermometer, because that was one thing I found was I didn't have a consistent oven.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. On production day, do you have one production day a week, or do you just do whenever?
So typically I'll make the shells ahead of time, and then I'll fill them closer to the date of pickup or our event. But macarons, they freeze very well. So I don't know if I'd have a business if they didn't.
Right.
So yeah. It's so nice. So I'll make the shells, and then I'll put them in the freezer, and then closer to time, I'll make the filling and then fill them. And then they do need to mature for at least 24 hours to really get that flavor soaked in to the cookie.
Yeah, it has to marry.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. The flavor is another thing I wanted to touch on, because the flavor range it's really unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to know your process for developing a flavor.
Yeah. So that was the other thing besides the color that really fascinated me about macarons, because, I mean, I firmly believe that most of the time, if you can think of a flavor, you can probably turn it into a macaron.
I would think that one of the temptations when you're first starting out and learning to make these things is to overfill. To put too much of a good thing in the center of these. And you really don't need that much.
Yeah.
Did you have that? Or were you a little more, I don't know, studied at the beginning?
Well, I think I was pretty controlled in that sense. Just having the knowledge I did about macarons before, and every time we would travel, I would scout out some macarons. And I didn't want it to be where you're taking away from the shell as well, because that is a big part of it.
Yes.
You don't think about it, because you don't really put a lot of flavoring into the shell itself. So, yeah. And I have seen on social media, they're called fat carons.
Oh.
And they are gigantic, and it's mostly filling.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just getting a ton of ganache or buttercream.
Mm-hmm. They did that with cupcakes for a while. Do you remember? It was just like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, maybe a little longer, that the overly decorated cupcake, to the point where they were scooping out the center of the cupcake and filling it with even more cream. And I thought, those make lovely pictures, and they're very fun to look at, but maybe not so much to eat. You mentioned vegan macarons before, and we, at Common Ground, we used to make pavlova, which is, you know, the meringue dessert. And we used aquafaba to make that meringue. And they were wonderful, and it worked out really well. Have you tried using anything like aquafaba, or is it something that you would like to experiment with at some point? Or are there other ways to make it vegan?
So, Yes, I definitely want to try that because, again, I want everybody to be able to, you know, try our macarons and have a sweet treat. Everybody deserves a sweet treat. But before this, I really never heard of aquafaba. I had just seen a lot of unsuccessful stories on the macaron forums, vegan macarons. But upon further research, there are success stories, and they look pretty much the same. By the comments made, I think they honestly taste the same as well.
That was our experience. For anyone who is not familiar with aquafaba, it is the when you buy a can of chickpeas and you drain the liquid. The liquid has got the fancy name. I don't know, somebody gave it the fancy name of aquafaba, you know, bean liquid, bean juice. Yeah. But it doesn't taste like beans when you bake it. It's just it's a very high protein, dense egg white substitute, and you can use it in all kinds of vegan cooking and vegan baking. Yeah, it's tricky, but not that tricky. If I could do it, believe me, you, Jenny, can do it. Yeah. Tell us where we can find your cookies.
Yeah, so always stay updated on our Facebook or Instagram. That's mainly where we're going to post our events. So we have, I believe, 3 events in April and May. So we've got a lot coming up. And we also just launched our new and improved website. My partner, Cody, had worked really hard on it. So he did a really good job. And you can actually order from the website now, too.
And that is thedaintyflower.com.
Yes.
Flower spelled FLOUR.
Yes.
Right. So you've already mentioned that you can freeze them, and you've already mentioned that you do custom orders. Do you ship?
Not yet. So that's one thing that would be a little tricky because they are so fragile. And we would have to figure out how to cushion them to where they're still pretty when you get them. And also, they should be refrigerated, so we would need to find some cooling agent or dry ice.
So a little tricky on that.
Yeah, but I really that's a goal I want to reach because that would be super cool.
Jenny Scheller, this has been so much fun talking to you, and I'm just delighted that your business is going well, and so I hope that people will explore your business on Facebook as well as look at your website.
Yeah. And well, thank you so much, Peggy. It's such an honor to be here.
I'm glad you said yes.
Yeah, me too.
You can find Jenny's macarons at thedaintyflower.com. That's flower spelled FLOUR. And at local events in and around Evansville. She's on Facebook, too, and Instagram, and you can look for her booth at the Saturday Sidewalk Sale coming up this May 10th from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m. in downtown Evansville. Links are in the show notes. For the next episode of Food From Here, I invited Brian Buxton of Fingers, Fork, Knife, and Spoon to come back for another conversation on what's happening in the local restaurant scene and to talk about his recent purchase of News For You and what that might mean for local food reporting. I hope you'll join me for that. Food From Here is produced at Tri-State Public Media in Evansville, Indiana, home of member-supported WNIN-FM and WNIN-PBS. I'm Peggy Pirro. Thanks for listening.